58%. Wind south at 9, 73 degrees for both Kenosha and Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. It's 10 past 8. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
Today's morning show interview was recorded 1 week ago on Tuesday, July 1st. And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Some of you may recall an interview that aired several weeks ago with the author of a book called And Housing for All, The Fight to End Homelessness in America, by Maria Foscarinas, who has worked in the sector of homelessness for many, many years. I wanted to be sure to follow up on that conversation by speaking about the issue of homelessness from a more local perspective. And what better way to do that than by talking about HALO, which stands for Homeless Assistance Leadership Organization, HALO, in Racine. And I'm very, very happy to welcome to our program for the very first time Yvonne MacDonald, who is Executive Director of HALO. Executive Director only as of the end of this past October. So she is still very much new on the job, but has worked in this area, in this sector of concern for quite some time. So we will be talking with her not only about specifically what HALO offers to the homeless, but also a bit about the whole situation of homelessness, especially as it plays out in Wisconsin and in a community like Racine, and the kind of things that that we need to do together as a society to combat this in a really meaningful way. Yvonne MacDonald, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg.
I'm really glad we can have this conversation. Ahead of us digging into all these specifics, tell our listeners a little bit about your professional career overall, the kind of things that you have been a part of or worked on through the course of your life, including, of course, the work that you have done in this particular area.
So, Greg, I've worked for over 30 years in the social service field. I worked for about 10 years with children and families and youth. In foster care settings, in schools, and et cetera. And then for over 20 years, I have worked in homelessness programs, running a large homeless shelter in Illinois, and also in housing programs for veterans, domestic violence, and so forth.
Mm. What drew you to this general field? I mean, not even specifically homelessness, but just wanting to work in this field of social services?
So, Greg, I didn't realize it until later in life, but I grew up in poverty. My mom didn't use a lot of public assistance programs, and so I didn't realize that we were at the poverty level. And I grew up knowing that I just had to work hard to get what I wanted because there wasn't a lot of it. And if it hadn't been for family supports, I would have ended up in a shelter as well.
Wow. So when you make that connection, then that fueled your interest and concern.
Yes, definitely.
Tell us what drew you to the opportunity to become the executive director of HALO.
Well, I ran a similar shelter in Illinois. And like I said, my passion is homelessness assistance. And the shelter in Illinois was the exact same size. We have 100 to 120 beds. And when it came up, it just seemed to be kismet that I should apply for the job. And I'm very happy. I've been there for 8 months, and we're doing wonderful things there.
Very good. So for somebody who is maybe new to the area, even newer than you are, or for whatever reason has not ever really directly encountered HALO or heard very much about it, tell us in brief what HALO offers, beginning, of course, with this aspect of being a homeless shelter. What does that mean?
Yes. So, Greg, we at any time house between 100 and 120 individuals who are homeless. We also provide them with their basic needs like meals, baby needs, transportation. We help them to obtain IDs and documents that they need for assistance. We also provide some temporary financial support, such as helping them move out with a security deposit or first month's rent. But we also focus on more knowledge. So we work to increase their resources by helping them through our case managers and setting goals and then referring to resources. But we also have on-site classes that teach life skills, parenting, financial classes, and so forth, so that people are prepared to either go into self-sufficiency or return to it.
Mm. So the goal, of course, is for somebody whom you are housing, for them not to be housed there all that long. I mean, you would love to see them able to, in a sense, house themselves,
yes.
Be sufficient on their own out in the community. So who ends up being housed at HALO? I mean, is it as simple as someone just walks in the door and says, I don't have any place to sleep tonight? Or is there a little more involved at the intake moment of the process?
So people can walk in, and they do. People know of our resource in the community, so they call us and they just walk in. We also get referrals from other organizations that we work with. We partner with a lot of the organizations in Racine. And then we get referrals from hospitals and Department of Corrections, probation officers, and so forth, who are looking for a place for their person that is leaving to go.
Mm. So someone who is, for instance, someone who has just left prison,
right,
and has not yet made plans or been able to secure housing for themselves, HALO would be one option for them.
Yes.
In Racine, are there other homeless shelters that are smaller? I know HALO is usually described as the largest homeless shelter in Racine. Is it the largest among a number of homeless shelters?
Well, we are the largest general homeless shelter, which means we house pretty much anyone. There are a couple of resources for domestic violence victims. And then there is a smaller shelter for youth who are unaccompanied and homeless.
Okay. So, but you are a general shelter, so you have no restrictions in that respect.
Correct.
In any given night, are you typically at capacity or close to capacity, or does that widely vary depending on the time of year and other factors?
We are definitely at capacity at all times. Mm. As soon as someone leaves, there's someone to take their bed. Unfortunately, the need is just greater than the resources. Definitely in the winter, we get more people seeking shelter, but we open overnight as what we call a warming shelter. So people can come in even if they aren't staying in our program, and we'll provide a space for them to sleep so that when it's freezing outside, you know, it's not dangerous for people.
Right. So at that point, I mean, when it comes to offering that, you offer that essentially to anybody who needs it.
Correct.
That's good to hear. I mean, it's sad to hear about that need, but that makes a difference. So tell us, typically, when someone is granted a space to stay at HALO, what is involved? What are the questions you ask, or are there ways in which someone needs to qualify in order to receive this assistance? I mean, tell us about the sort of the intake process.
Sure. So we certainly ask questions. We are part of the continuum of care in Racine, which the continuums of care are all over the country, and they were developed about 20 years ago now by HUD in order for the community members and organizations that are working in the sector to decide how best to use the HUD dollars that come into the community. So we definitely have to ask questions because we keep data for HUD, but it's all aggregate data. We don't provide any personal identifying information. There really isn't any kind of eligibility except for not having a place to stay. We are considered a low barrier shelter. So that means that people can come in, they can actively be having substance abuse issues and actively be having mental illness issues. And we do not make them go and seek assistance before or after they come into the shelter. We certainly hook them up with a case manager, and they work with them to secure their trust and so forth and provide resources. But we do not make anyone do anything at HALO.
So tell us how the housing facilities themselves are set up. Are we talking about gigantic rooms with lots and lots of bunk beds? Or are we talking about many individual rooms? I mean, generally speaking, how are people distributed? How does the housing sort of physically look?
So physically, the building is separated by two sides. There is a male side, and then there's a women and family side. When a parent or parents come in, they're given a family room. If it's a large family, they have it to themselves. We occasionally will get a male who is a single parent, and they will be put on that side as well so that the children are all together. They are rooms, so in each room there are varying numbers of bunk beds. The reason that the population numbers fluctuate is that some people can't get up on the top bunks. That causes a problem. But for some reason, for space reasons, we have to bunk the beds, unfortunately. So we try to move people around when somebody comes in with physical or developmental disabilities or chronic health conditions.
Right. You just mentioned that it is a low barrier facility, which means that you are welcoming to nearly everybody, including persons, homeless people who, I should think, present certain challenges in terms of keeping everybody safe, safe and comfortable and so on. What provisions do you use at HALO when it comes to, for instance, accepting somebody who is contending with some mental illness or addiction issues or whatever? Does that in any way change exactly what you offer them, or how it's offered to them, or where they are placed?
Not particularly. It doesn't change how we provide the services to them or what we offer. We do have safety rules because, as you probably know, in a large facility like that, we have to have certain rules that, boundaries that you cannot cross in terms, and they're mostly in terms of safety. So when someone is behaviorally acting in a way that might be unsafe, we might have them sleep in a separate room, but we don't kick people out for coming in drunk or high or not being on their medications. We still house them, and we still try to provide the services that we provide to everyone and give them the opportunity.
That prompts the question of what kind of staff are we talking about? And that, so for instance, on a typical night when people are coming in looking for housing, how many people are there to kind of shepherd the homeless who are there and making sure everybody is safe and taken care of?
We have what you call client support specialists. So they are the people who work on the front lines, and they work, all throughout the day and night, manning the shelter, trying to keep it safe and comfortable, and helping clients with conflict resolution and resources in between their case management sessions. We have two of those on daytime and nighttime. So it's not a lot of staff, but with our rules and working with the guidelines with the people that we serve, we don't have a lot of incidents, which is very good.
Yeah. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking today on the morning show with Yvonne MacDonald, who is the executive director of HALO. HALO stands for Homeless Assistance Leadership Organization. It is the largest homeless shelter in Racine. It is a low-barrier homeless shelter, which means that there are very few stipulations in terms of who is permitted to stay there. It is a facility with, I think you said, over 100 beds?
Correct.
And as Yvonne MacDonald indicated earlier, HALO is perpetually at capacity. Let's talk for a moment about who is staying at HALO at any given time in terms of what tends to drive people into homelessness. And I'm sure it's not an easy thing to summarize, and I'm sure we are doing a disservice to the homeless when we, you know, try to make simplistic generalizations about this is what causes homelessness and this is what their problems tend to be. Acknowledging that, I think it would be helpful for us in just wrapping our heads around this to understand maybe kind of the scope and breadth of all of the different factors that often can lead to somebody becoming homeless.
Sure. So I'm sure that the listeners think of the single male who might be alcohol dependent or mentally ill, because that's what you see oftentimes if people are on the streets or not sheltered. We certainly have our share of those, but we also serve a lot of parents and families. Last year we served 82 kids out of the 450 people that we served, which is just a shame. We have veterans, we have the elderly, who come to us because they're on a fixed income and their income is not enough. We have all sorts of people who come to us. Many of them have other barriers to getting out of homelessness, such as chronic homelessness. They've been homeless for over a year or several times within a few years. They have physical disabilities and developmental disabilities. Like I mentioned, mental health issues and substance abuse. Those are not the causes of homelessness, but it certainly makes it much harder and more complex to return to self-sufficiency for those individuals.
Mm-hmm. So often they find themselves homeless, and the factors that you were just mentioning can really weigh them down in terms of that process of trying to reintegrate into society. I mean, finding proper shelter and self-sufficiency.
Correct. And that's why our case managers are so important, because each individual or family gets a case manager who works with them on a weekly basis, sometimes daily. They help them to set self-sufficiency goals so that they can get housing and increase their income. 50% of our people actually have income. It's just that about three-quarters of those make less than $1,500 a month. And that's significantly less than it costs to house yourself.
Right. Well, and this also takes us back to an issue that we've explored before on the morning show, which is that there is such a shortage of housing, and in particular, although we see all kinds of new construction springing up, but that is often construction that is homes and condominiums and so on that are well out of reach of a lot of the people that we're talking about here.
Correct.
So when it comes to low-income housing, it sounds like that is a very scarce commodity, not only in Racine, but in a lot of different places.
Yeah, that's the number one cause of homelessness. So the causes of homelessness are not individual. They're not personal to a person. They are largely systemic in our society. So lack of affordable housing is the biggest issue. So according to the National Alliance to End Homelessness, there are only 35 rental units for every very low income renters. And their statistics, a very low income renter in Racine would be less than $22,500 a year. So we're not even talking necessarily the people that we serve at HALO, but people who are working and working minimum wage or just above minimum wage jobs.
And just trying to survive, trying
Correct.
To function, and so on. And if there just aren't enough places that are within budgetary reach, then we really have a crisis on our hands.
Right.
How much contact do you have with your counterparts at other homeless shelters, especially in Wisconsin? And I guess maybe I want to preface this by asking, are there any ways in which this is dealt with in Wisconsin differently than the homelessness issue is dealt with in Illinois, where you have been most recently working in the homeless sector?
It's very similar in Wisconsin. Like I said, most homeless shelters have funding from the continuums of care, and those are throughout the United States. So the continuums of care filter down the HUD money, and then the local community decides according to their needs and their types of housing that are needed where the resources go. So it's very similar in Illinois as to in Wisconsin. I have noticed that in Wisconsin we have more rooms as opposed to like a congregate sleeping place, like you mentioned before, a large room where people have either cots or beds. Typically that's how homeless shelters run in Illinois, but it's actually nicer in Wisconsin because you have some privacy.
Yeah, for sure. This is probably as good a time as any for us to mention something that I'm sure is of tremendous frustration to you and others working in this sector, and namely the matter of federal funding, which I'm sure is a very important part of what you do. You've already mentioned the Department of Housing and Urban Development and some of that funding that is crucial, and the specter of that funding actually being cut at a time when need is escalating. That has to be a really scary proposition. Tell us more about that sobering reality.
Sure. It is a very sobering reality. We are all working to advocate for increased federal funding because that's one of the ways that we can increase people getting out of homelessness. Unfortunately, right now, in the current way the budget is, we only have 16% of the shelter population being able to get into permanent housing through homeless assistance programs. So out of the people that are in shelters, we can only give 16% of them opportunity through a homelessness assistance program to be housed. And in President Trump's package, his budget calls for $532 million in cutting for the homeless assistance programs. And he will be cutting the permanent supportive housing program, which is for those who are chronically homeless and also have some sort of disability, which we know there are a lot of those. We've seen a lot of those people at HALO. In fact, we have 33 beds of that at HALO in Racine at HALO. So we're talking about cutting across the United States 276,000 units or apartments of this type of housing, and those people will all be facing homelessness again if this happens.
Wow. We're speaking with Yvonne McDonald, who is executive director of HALO, Homeless Assistance Leadership Organization, the largest homeless shelter in Racine, and we are talking about all that they offer. And it's interesting, I think, when we hear about cuts in this sector, we think about the housing part of it in terms of just being able to house people at HALO, and what you are saying in terms of what is damaged the most is the next part, which in some respects is equally important, and that's the part about trying to help people to find self-sufficiency, and which should, of course, be the ultimate highest goal. And that those kind of efforts are going to be crippled, assuming these budget cut proposals go through as outlined. Let's get a sense of all that is involved in that. And actually, when I went on your website, haloinc.org,
yes,
I was really amazed at the long list of programs that are listed there. So this is about a whole lot more than just beds. So tell us, for instance, about some of the programs that involve things like financial planning and budget counseling, which I see listed as some of what you offer.
Sure. So we have started to increase that programming. During the day, we will have a calendar of classes or groups, depending on how many people that are there and what the topic is. But we offer people come in from other organizations. We have, for instance, Racine Vocational Ministry, who works with employment and helping people reintegrate into the community out of prisons. So they come in and they do individual and group work to help people find employment. We also work with Workforce Development, which is right next door. So we refer a lot of people there for employment resources. But we also have set up some resource stations with some donated computers and donated printers so that we can have people have the opportunity to seek their own employment, create resumes, and seek housing. But we also have, like I said, financial knowledge is very important, right, for people. If you don't know how to budget, or if you've been living in a scarcity mode, as most people in poverty are, where the minute you get money, you want to spend it on something because it's going to go away, right? And so we try to reteach people to think differently about saving and budgeting and necessary items versus needs, versus wants, I should say. And so we do work a lot on that. And then finally, we work on different life skills like parenting, renter rights, different things about having an apartment and keeping your housing.
I should think that one of the tricky matters is how to offer that kind of assistance in a way that is helpful and yet also gives dignity to the person with whom you're working, because, of course, you're in most cases talking about people who are adults, and yet adults who, and this is not in every case, of course, but in many cases, adults who for whatever reason have not managed to acquire some really fundamental skills for functioning in the world. And I should think it's a real challenge in terms of how to most effectively and respectfully offer that kind of help.
It is, and that's why we make those resources optional to people. The case managers work with their individual resident to really establish some rapport and trust so that they can sort of work with them through their interviews with individuals so that hopefully the individuals who we are serving are coming to realize that things that have always worked for them have not worked, actually. So the way they've been doing things is not working, and maybe we need to try something different. And then our workers and the people who come in from the other organizations are very respectful to the fact that these are adults. We don't talk to them like children. We really work to provide the knowledge in the courses in a manner that all people can learn. We know that learners are visual, they're auditory, they're tactile. So we try to use a lot of different modalities in the classes and try to make it fun as well.
Sure. So is there a limit, time limit, in terms of how long someone is allowed to live at HALO?
So our average length of stay right now is about 90 days. Certainly, that includes people who stay much, much longer, and some people come to us and only need a week. But there is no time limit to our stay. People, we provide the resources, and as long as they're taking up those opportunities and trying to help themselves, then they can stay for as long as it takes, because it is often a complex issue, like I said. The societal barriers, and then the individual impacts that people have that make it much more difficult to get out of homelessness.
Right, especially when it comes to matters of like trying to further their education, trying to get a degree,
right,
to do something or whatever, but trying to do that when you have no home to call your own. And of course, I'm sure we're also, in some cases, talking about people who do not have, let's call it, the cushion of a loving, supportive family that to whom they can turn for help. I mean, sometimes we're talking about people who really are, for the most part, on their own.
Yes. Unfortunately, for the majority of the people we serve, there are no family resources. So, you know, one individual's family may have been in intergenerational poverty, and so their parents are just struggling to get by, or they're in senior housing where they can't take in the family members. And so that makes it more difficult for some. In some instances, if the person has struggled with mental illness and unaddressed substance abuse issues for many years, we will say maybe they've burned some bridges with their family, you know, where the family has tried to help and help, and then they have at some point have to set a boundary. So we really are dealing with individuals who have no other alternative. And that's why emergency shelters are so important. I always like to say it's a Band-Aid on the issue. But it's needed, because we'll always have people who end up homeless. And in the immediate time, it takes much longer to get them into the housing assistance programs or help them out of that. So, which is, like you said, the ultimate solution.
Right. Yeah, I think when you work in this sector, you start to think about, you know, if you could wave a magic wand and remake the world or remake society, you start thinking about what would it take to really combat homelessness at sort of the root cause level. When you think about this, you and your colleagues at HALO, what do you wish could be put in place that would most meaningfully address this really sad reality?
So, number one, I would hope that the budget stays the same, and I would ask people to contact their senators, because they're about to go in to voting sessions, and so we definitely want to get more people who are advocating for more federal funding for programming. We also just need more affordable housing for everyone. That is a very complex issue, because I'm sure you've heard the term "not in my backyard," or NIMBY, we call it. No one wants to see a homeless shelter or some of the low-income housing go up in their backyard or close to their homes. But we have to get more creative. We have to offer tax incentives to developers to develop low-income housing. And we have to get creative with zoning. So the city of Oak Park, Illinois, is a model in providing affordable housing. And the way they did it was they provided mixed income housing in a majority of their housing in the city. So they offered developers large tax credits to build mixed income. So you have some low income, some medium income, and maybe upper middle class income in the same building, so that you don't have all low income, or it's exclusive of the low income people.
And that's kind of extraordinary to hear, because as you're describing that, you know, one can just sort of conjure up the chorus of people who might be hesitant about that or even outright resistant, but somehow they made that happen. And it sounds like, at least from your vantage point, that has been a great success.
It has been a great success, Greg. And I think we just need to, all over the United States, get more creative like that to increase the housing. The other issue is that over time, incomes have not kept up with rents. I'm sure that some of your listeners are feeling this. Right now, in order to afford a one-bedroom in Racine, which is $1,100 a month average, someone has to work 94 hours a week at a minimum wage job. The minimum wage has not kept up with the consumer price index, which it was intended to do. And so as the interest and inflation increases, the minimum wage has not increased. But again, that's a completely complex issue that we can't really resolve on this show, but because, you know, we have local small employers who can't afford more than the minimum wage and so forth. So it's a very difficult issue to get to. But we also have to put up more renter and employment protections. There's a lot of discrimination, particularly against the Black population and the undocumented population. So, for instance, in the city of Racine, we have the Black community making up 12% of the population. However, at Halo, they make up almost 50% of the homeless. And that's a very significant disparity that we need to work on through more protections. And I think finally we need to reform public assistance. So we need to cut through the red tape and the application process and renewal processes and all the paperwork needs to be easier. There's long waits, which we need to cut down so that people can get that assistance in an emergency when they need it. And we also need to increase the low-income tax credit so that people who are working and have earned income can take advantage of a larger tax credit to help their families.
Hmm. Well, it's a long list, but it also speaks to the complexity of the issue. I mean, the complexity of the problem. I mean, there are some ways in which this is about as basic as anything gets. And yet, in terms of rectifying the current situation and why it is causing the difficulty that it is, solving that, remaking that, is not a simple matter, of course, at all. And I appreciate you really laying that out in such detail. For people listening to this and feeling concern for the Halo facility and concern for the homeless in our community, and wanting to do something beyond what you've already mentioned, which is important, that is reaching out to elected officials and beating the drum for this issue. Are there things that people, for instance, can give to Halo, including things or time or money, or how can people be helpful?
Well, Greg, we're always looking for volunteers. We have a meal program, so we do have some churches and civic groups who come in and serve a monthly meal at dinner time, and it's really helpful because it brings some fellowship to and some hope to our residents who don't have that. It just brings another outside perspective, and it's just good to see community members involved. It helps people to feel better about their situation. We are certainly also looking always for financial donations. Any amount can help. It's very costly to run a 24-hour, 365-day shelter with the staffing costs and the food and everything. We're always looking for financial support. And finally, people can donate goods and even services. So we have had people donate food. We've had people donate hygiene supplies, baby supplies like diapers and so forth. And then we've also had people, businesses in particular, give us breaks on different things. So we just... We just replaced the flooring in our facility, and we repainted the entire shelter. So thank you to Sherman Williams in Racine, who gave us a significant discount donation for the paint. And we're trying to make the place look better for everyone, including the clients, the staff, and volunteers.
Right. I should think that makes a big difference in terms of people feeling a sense of pride, and feeling like they are someplace where they are really cared about, and even to those kind of matters that a lot of us wouldn't even stop to think about or so easily take for granted. It's great that you and others are really thinking about that. So you've only been at Halo since October.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably in some ways a little early to be asking you for stories, and yet I'm sure you already have some in terms of some of the people that you have been working with. Although maybe this is a good time to ask, to what extent are you an active intermediary? I mean, to what extent are you actually directly working with the people who are being housed at Halo? Or are you, I can imagine you're your life being filled with all kinds of just administrative duties, which might not allow you all that much sort of one-on-one time with the homeless people that you are working with.
Sure. Certainly, I wear a lot of administrative hats. We only have two and a half people in our administration. So, you know, we're talking about having to take care of HR, financial things, you know, things that that we have to get done on a daily basis, including drawing down from our grant after we've spent the money. So there's a lot to do in administration. I am not directly involved with the clients on a day-to-day basis. However, I know a lot of them, and I know some of their stories. I think the most difficult stories are the people who are coming to us and just have not found housing in many, many years. Mm. We had a gentleman who was disabled physically. He had an engineering degree and lost his job and cannot hardly walk. Mm. And has difficulty even sitting for long periods of time due to some back injury that he's had. And it's a shame that he was not able to find housing. He stayed with us for quite some time before he got into our permanent supportive housing program. But he was homeless for many, many years. And then it's very sad to see the parents with kids in the shelter. Homelessness really affects kids in a very negative way. It impacts them with trauma that carries with them throughout their lifetime. So we do as much as we can to make it a comfortable place for the adults and the kids. So we do provide summer programming for the kids and after-school tutoring, anything that can help the kids to sort of stay in a normal space, mm. mentally and physically.
Right. Yeah, I think that's one thing that we often don't think about is if we think about this at all, and of course some of us don't think about this as much as we should, but when we think about the homeless, I think we tend to think about that moment, that night, that where will I sleep? Well, I'll sleep at Halo and so on. But we don't often think about kind of the ongoing impact that this has when somebody is homeless and probably in very fundamental ways feels like they lack value, and I mean even utter worthlessness, and that's no small matter to think about somebody enveloped in those kind of feelings, and those kind of feelings can lead to other kinds of darkness. So I should think for you and those who work at Halo that has to be very high on your list of priorities.
It is. That's why we always try to treat people with respect. I think many of us are one paycheck away from, you know, being homeless. And many of the listeners are probably in that boat. And it's a very sad situation with the way the economy is right now and how rents have increased and housing prices have increased. So we all try not to think just from our own perspective, but think from their perspective as well. You know, because like I said, I have been in this boat as a child, and I know what it feels like to not have a home and hop from family member to family member, which many of our residents do before they exhaust those resources and have to come to us. And it's not fun to be in a homeless shelter, not at all. It's not some place that people go. It's not a hotel. Mm. You know, so people don't want to stay in the shelter, and it is difficult. You're in a congregate living space. You eat your meals with people you don't know. You don't know what the next person's situation is sitting next to you. It is very difficult, and so we try to shorten that time as much as possible through our resources.
Right. Very good. So let's have you just reiterate, first of all, how people can get more information about Halo and the most productive avenues by which people can support the work that you do.
Sure. So right now, the best way to get in touch with us is to go to our website at www.haloinc.org. Through there, you can do an email. You can use our phone system, although we're trying to upgrade that. That's why I don't want to give out the phone number. It's not the most reliable. We're actually looking for funding for that right now. You can also go to our Facebook page. We get many messages through Facebook from people who are in need of the shelter and who want to support the shelter. And, you know, you can just stop by. We're at 2200...
DeKoven
Avenue. I'm sorry. Yeah. For some reason, I lost that. And we're in Racine, and like I said, we're located right next to the Workforce Development County Building.
Very good. Very good. Well, I've known a number of different people who have been deeply involved in HALO over the years, and there's no question the positive impact that HALO has had on the community of Racine. By the way, is there any possibility that the housing facility itself could ever be enlarged, or is that not a viable possibility?
It is a possibility, Greg. We have an entire upstairs. We're located in a 100-year-old factory. Hmm. So as you can imagine, we spend a large budget on maintenance every year, mm-hmm. And which makes it very difficult. You know, the HVAC and like the flooring, I said, we need bathroom remodeling and so forth. But the upstairs is just a raw space. In the future, if we ever get somebody who's interested in helping us with that, it would take several $1 million. But we would be able to then have offices upstairs or move the housing upstairs, which would expand our housing significantly.
Right. Well, we'll watch that possibility with great interest. In the meantime, I appreciate you taking time out of your very busy schedule to be a part of the morning show today to talk about all that HALO offers to the community. And again, more information is available at their website, haloinc.org. Yvonne McDonald, the executive director, thank you so much for joining us today on the morning show. Best wishes to you and everybody at HALO.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Tomorrow on the morning show, we look forward to a return visit from Linda Guy, past president of the Four Seasons Garden Club in Kenosha, talking about their biggest fundraising event of the year, the Secret Garden Walk, which is coming up this Saturday. Then on Thursday, Kaylin Palomares pays her monthly visit to the program. Her guest will be Monty Osterman, vice chair of Wisconsin Land and Water and representative of Wisconsin for the National Association of Conservation Districts. We will discuss the work that NACD does, their upcoming summer meeting in Milwaukee, and we'll talk about a particular conservation project funded by NACD that is underway in Racine County. On Friday, two different authors, one of them Dr. Cheryl Gonzalez-Sigler, author of a very interesting book called The Crucial Years, The Essential Guide to Mental Health and Modern Puberty in Middle Childhood. It examines the phenomenon that puberty is beginning to happen earlier and earlier in the lives of young people. And this book kind of confronts some of the ways in which then that alters the challenge of parenting youngsters who are in that so-called middle childhood phase. Part two will feature Gary Baum, who is a journalist for The Hollywood Reporter and the author of a wonderful, entertaining novel set in Hollywood called In Pursuit of Beauty. The Morning Show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The Morning Show is archived on our website, WGTD.org. And you can also enjoy The Morning Show in podcast format. Look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. Our weather forecast is for Partly sunny skies today, but with a 50% chance of rain developing in the late morning into the early afternoon hours, a high of 83. A 50% chance of rain overnight as well, with a low of 68. But tomorrow, sunny and warm, with a high of 82. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha Receive.